all the way to Sector 9 HQ, where she switched to civilian transport. Esme felt she had a fiery brand on her forehead and back, defining what most fleet personnel thought of her. She kept to herself as much as possible, trying to think how to explain to her father her precarious state in fleet. Perhaps the funeral and its aftermath would distract him, for it seemed she was, in fact, her great-grandmother's heir. Her previous visit to Altiplano had begun with pomp and ceremony. This time, she had the ceremony, but no pomp, and no news hounds. Her father met her in the inbound reception lounge. She almost did not recognize him in the formal mourning garments. He had brought one of the Estancia maids to help her into the clothes she must wear. In the ladies' retiring room, she changed from fleet uniform to the layers of white, long pantaloons under a petticoat, a short white chemise. The outer layers were all black, like her father's. Wide-sleeved black blouse, full black skirt, black brocade short vest heavily overbeaded in jet. Women's boots with the top rolled down to reveal the black silk lining. On her head, a stiff black cap sitting squarely across her brow, with a rolled knob at either side. The weight of the clothes burdened her almost as much as the secrets she carried. Slowly, in a cadence old as the mountains, they walked from the reception area to the shuttle bay. She was used to being a half step behind her father, if not more. But now, slow as she walked, he would walk slower.
It's real.
She was the land bride. For no one else would her father slow his steps. On the shuttle down, he spoke briefly of the arrangements, then left her with a sheaf of old-fashioned paper, the family copy of the old rites in which her great-grandmother had lived her long life. Esme read carefully. She would have a coach, but the more she could do by herself, the better. She had never witnessed the ceremony of land bride's gifting, though she had heard others talk of it. At the shuttle field, it was just past sunset, with a fiery glow behind the mountains. By the time they were out of the city, night closed around them. Esme switched on the light in the passenger compartment and kept reading. Then her father touched her arm and pointed ahead. Esme switched the light off and peered into the darkness. On either side of the road, flickering lights resolved into rows of black-clothed figures holding candles. The car slowed and stopped. Her father handed her out. They walked slowly up to the great entrance and up the long drive, and the others closed in behind them. The house loomed, darker than the darkness around it. Then candlelight appeared from inside. The family, each carrying a candle. Esme entered a chill, dark space where normally light and warmth held sway. No fires would be kindled until after the ceremony. She walked through the house and lit one of the tiny candles in each room, a promise of the land bride's coming. Then through and out into the land bride's gift, the heart of the holding, and the place where the first land bride in her heartline had made claim long, long ago. There the priest waited for her, with the basket that held the braided coil of her great-grandmother's hair. Her great-grandmother's body had long been buried, of course, and the new pale gravestone set above it. In the dark night, by flickering candlelight, Esme led the women of the Estancia in slow procession around each land bride's gravestone, starting with the oldest and ending with the latest. The men standing around the margin of the space did not follow. When the dance was done, Esme took the silvery braid from its basket and held it high, turning to show it to everyone.
She, who was land bride, is no more.
She has returned to the land, and her spirit to the heavens.
Her power is released.
Esme untied the silk cord and untwisted the strands of the braid. The night wind sighed down off the mountains, cold around her legs even through the layers of clothes. Candle flames streamed sideways. A few went out. Esme untied the second cord at the top of the braid and held the loosened braid high in her open hands. A gust of wind picked up one strand, then another. She heard the next gust coming, shaking the trees around the glade. When she felt it, she leaped up, tossing the hair free, and landed in darkness, all the candles blown out.
Now is the death. Now is the sorrow born.
It had been a long life. It was a long dirge, and it ended only when the darkness crept back under the trees with approaching dawn. Light strengthened moment by moment. The priest, with his tall black hat, had turned his back to face the sunrise. The women helped Esme back through the crowd, into the curtained tent she had not seen for the darkness. Quickly, they stripped off the black vest, waistcloth, skirt, blouse, boots. Over the pure white underclothes, they helped her into the land bride's traditional outfit. White blouse with wide pleated sleeves, white skirt pinstriped in green, white doeskin vest embroidered and beaded in brilliant color with flowers and vines and fruit, and to top it all, the hat with its two blunt points, from each of which a gold tassel fell past her ear to her shoulder. Around her waist, the scarlet and purple striped waistcloth, folded and tied precisely. In its folds, a narrow belt, to which was hung on her right hip a sickle's curved blade, its metal varicolored with age, but its edge still gleaming. On her left side, slung from a shoulder strap, she had a pouch of seed. Soft green boots, lined in yellow silk, would come later. For the first, she would go barefoot. Back outside, the risen sun streamed through the trees in long red-gold shafts, but the dew beneath her feet felt icy cold. The priest turned to face her. He raised on outstretched hands a long, sharpened stick. The men moved to stand behind him.
From night comes day, by the grace of God, and from the death of one comes the life of another, as the seed in the ground dies to live, as the grain that blows in the sun.
Esme lifted her arms in the ritual gestures.
Does any here challenge the land bride's lineage? Or is there cause she should not be wed?
The priest waited out a full count of 100. Esme counted it out in her own mind, then nodded.
So it shall be. This bride to this land, to the end of her life, or her willing gift to her heir.
He held out the digging stick. Esme strode out into the little circle of grain land kept for this purpose, and planted carefully each year. Though the season was wrong, and what she planted would not grow, it still felt connected to some larger ritual which would work, which would bind the land to her and her to the land. She was not sure she wanted that, but she knew what she had to do. With the digging stick, she pried up 3 holes at the corners of an equilateral triangle, pushing through the earth until they were big enough. Then, taking the old sickle blade, she laid the edge to the palm of her left hand. It hardly hurt at first, and the blood ran redder than her sash into the clods of earth that were loosened from the holes, darkening them. When it was enough, the women nodded, and she held out her hand for someone to bind in the kerchief that would henceforth be laid under the kitchen hearthstone. Esme took 5 seeds from the sack and dropped them carefully into the first hole, then the second, then the third. Her helpers came behind her, replacing the bloodied clods. By now, the smells of food had wafted across from the kitchens. With the land bride's dawn, fires could be lit and cookstoves heated. Fresh hot bread, roasted meat. Esme sat on a throne piled with late flowers as the feast was carried out to her guests.
The Serrano Legacy, Rules of Engagement, is continued on the next CD.